I am Yetta. I am actually on vacation today. I drove in because I think that listening to what IQ has to say is extraordinarily important. And what I have subsequently learned is that Scott and Larry had decided that they would handle this next hour talking about the news together, and that Scott has a number of topics that he wanted to bring up with our good friend Larry commenting on them. So I might chime in from time to time, but since I'm on vacation, fellas, I'm going to put up my...
You have had it there.
Yeah, really. Larry's laughing because I'm such a passive listener.
I already know how this is going to go.
That's funny. Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm good. How was the vacation?
Yeah, well, you know, I was back east in our Virginia home when we had all of our family there, so it was a wonderful time. I want to thank you for covering the Friday yada yada.
I covered part of it anyway. Yeah.
So thank you for doing that. And my wife decided she was going to drive back with me. We left right after the show. The show at East Coast ends at 3 o'clock on Monday. So very early Tuesday morning we departed and began our drive. Across country and ended up.
So you're in California now.
Yeah, into Tennessee in the second night. Santa Rosa, New Mexico was our second night. And rather than stay another night in Arizona and drive partway, I was pleased to find out that when I was filling the car up in Flagstaff, Arizona, that my wife dialed in the address of our home here in the Santa Barbara area. And so we made it here late last night. So, yeah, this is a surprise. Wow. I did not think I would be able to do the program today.
Snow
so
over
Scott,
staff yet?
No, in fact, it was interesting. You know, we're here in California and Drought Central where water is allocated and you're fined if you flush the toilet too many times during the day.
You should just buy water and bring it in.
I built, you know, reservoirs for water and adapted my irrigation system to use non-city water, and they shut that down too. We needed, when I returned here, an arc would have been better than a garden because everything's flooded. But driving across country, we didn't see the sun until we crossed the border into California for 2.5 days, almost 3 full days of driving almost 2,500 miles. It rained on us the entire way. This country is so wet. It is truly amazing. But anyway, we're back. So, Scott, you've dialed up some news topics, and Larry, you are the commentator de jour.
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay. Go ahead.
It's probably not going to work out that way, but here it goes. So I came across a CBC News story today involving ISIS or ISIL or Islamic State or whatever you want to call it. And apparently now John Kerry is calling them the Daesh. Let's see here.
So he just decided to change
the Mideast Daesh.
Just to change their name because there are their foes.
Yep.
The Shia Muslims and the Kurds.
So
are calling them Daesh. So we're going to change their name.
Yep. Yesterday, speaking in Brussels, he said, in less than 3 months, the international community has come together to form a coalition that is already taking important steps to degrade and defeat ISIL or Daesh. He said, Daesh is still perpetrating terrible crimes. The switch in name comes after months of confusion over how to label the group. Other governments, including Canada, Australia, and the United Kingdom, refer to it as ISIL. Still others and many media outlets call it Islamic State or IS. CBC News' current language policy is to refer to the group as ISIS. France was the first to embrace the Daesh name in September, and French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius asked the media and others to do the same. This is a terrorist group and not a state. I do not recommend using the term Islamic State because it blurs the lines between Islam, Muslims, and Islamists. He said in a statement at the time, the Arabs call it Daesh, and I will be calling them the Daesh cutthroats.
So,
well, you want to be pretty politically correct, you know, when you're talking about people that rape and murder. I mean, you don't want to blur the line there. I get that.
Sure. Yeah. So what we're going to do here is, because it isn't politically correct, even though it is correct, to refer to the Islamic State as Islamic, we're going to change their name because we don't want to infer the absolute connection between Islam and beheadings and rape and terrorism. Is that the bottom line here?
That's what it sounds like, because in the same article, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton objected to the label Islamic State as well and explained why during a visit to Ottawa in October. Whether you call them ISIS or ISIL, I refuse to call them the Islamic State because they are neither Islamic nor a state, she said during a Canada 2020 conference. Whatever you call them, I think we can agree that the threat is real.
Yeah. The fact is that they are Islamic. They are the purest manifestation of Islam on the planet today. And they're absolutely a state. They're as much a state as is the city-state of Syria today, which is Damascus. And the puppet state of Iraq, which is Iran West.
Well, that quote right there sounds very familiar to another quote that somebody...
Oh, yeah, the Abominator.
Yeah, the Abominator had the exact same quote.
Right, and we mocked him for days when he said, let me make two points perfectly clear. First, the Islamic State is... I didn't even call him the Islamic State, he called him ISIL. They're not Islamic. I mean, they're as pure a manifestation of Islam as any group on the planet today. To say they're not Islamic, saying, is to say, don't trust anything I say. I am going to lie to you. And there's an agenda behind my lie. But you need to know that I am lying to you and never trust anything I say when you say the Islamic State is not Islamic. And state, they have their own government. They have their own judicial system. They have their own currency. They govern territory. They have their own military. How is that not a state?
Sounds like a state to me. Sounds like they're doing their own thing.
But it's
I've just always known them as Daesh because of my wife. But they, you know, that's what they call them over there. In fact, my Israeli friends call them Daesh. So I'm not sure what the difference is, but they're Islamic as they get. They're fundamentalist as they get. It's certainly a lie to say they're not Islamic. They're pure Islam.
Yeah. Those who refer to them as Daesh, as the cutthroats, you have to first recognize they were not referred to as Daesh, the cutthroats. What it was, the original Islamic State was the Islamic State in Iraq. And they were conceived as one of the smaller Islamic terrorist groups on behalf of the Sunnis to slow down the growing assault of Shia Islam. Now, your wife came from Iran, so she's going to view things from the Shia perspective. But the at least as it relates to Sunni Shia, they were never referred to as Daesh then. And then
they weren't. That's a new term.
Right. And then when they moved into Syria and became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, which is how we get ISIS, they were a minor organization. They very seldom even made the radar. The dominant Islamic terrorist group in Syria had been al-Nusra. Now, did the locals refer to al-Nusra as the cutthroats?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
No, they didn't.
But they were doing exactly the same thing. They were most of the videos that I have of cutting of throats, which, by the way, is a Quranic act. It tells them to smite them on their necks, which is to cut their throats. Almost all of the videos in Iraq of beheadings are done by al-Nusra. So they would be the cutthroats if there were cutthroats. And so you're telling me that Daesh came about only when the Islamic State changed their name and said, we're not the Islamic State in Iraq, we're not the Islamic State in Syria, we're just the Islamic State. Well, is that when they the name Daesh emerged there?
I'm not sure, but I think so. You know, just when they decided to try to, I think they're trying to distance it from Islam. I really didn't consider it. I think the bigger point here is that we have all these people that are saying it's not Islamic when clearly it is, and from right. our perspectives, our Congress funded them for a half Correct. Billion dollars.
Correct.
I mean, what in the hell is going on that we're supposedly fighting an enemy we totally fund? What is, where's, this is insane.
It's insane. It's far worse than that. Let me tell you why it's far worse than that. You are correct that our Congress awarded a half $1 billion to provide weapons overtly to the Islamic State. But we've been funneling weapons through Qatar in the billions for the Islamic State prior to that, covertly. But beyond that, and this is what's really important, the Islamic State did not become the Islamic State. They weren't even the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. They were simply the Islamic State in Iraq. Until the military that was provided by America to the Shias in Iraq started using American weapons against civilian Sunnis and bombarded them with our helicopters, with our artillery. They were bombarding Fallujah and other Sunni cities. And then the awakening program that Petraeus had conceived that was part of the surge, which was to weaponize Sunni warlords, they became the basis of what is today the Islamic State. And we provided them with billions of dollars worth of weapons. We've been at this for a very long time.
I think one of the things that gets me is that they're really muddying the waters on this a lot, because in a matter of 3 months, they've changed their name more than Prince ever did. They've gone from Islamic State to ISIS to ISIL, back to the Islamic State to now Daesh. No, you can't tell me that that's not on purpose. They're doing that on purpose.
Yeah, it's what, if you look at pagan religions, the God is always the same. It's Satan, but he changes his name just for confusion. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, guys. It seems to me that there's only one reason for changing the Islamic State's name to a description of one of their behaviors. One of their behaviors is they cut throats. They do beheadings because that's what the Quran orders them to do. And that is that Europeans and American politicians don't want the world to make the connection between this horrendous behavior and Islam. Guys, do you agree?
I guess if you're going to fund it, no, you don't really want that out there, do you?
No.
Probably not.
You don't want, no. Because at this point, the United States is bombing the Islamic State, which is they're at war with Islam. And that's what the Islamic State is telling the world, and it happens to be true. So what the United States is trying to do is, and France, is try to change the name of the actual organization to a behavior of that organization. Kind of reminds me, guys, of War on Terror. Is there an organization called Terrorist?
Terror? No.
No, an organization. Is there a state called Terror? Is
not that I'm aware of. No.
So, terrorism is a tactic, right?
It is a tactic.
Yes.
That's right.
Cutting people's throats, beheading them, that's a tactic, isn't it?
Sure is.
Very much so.
So what we're going to call it, we're going to call the group that uses a tactic, cutting throats, and we're going to label them as a tactic, as terrorists. But understanding that there is no way for anyone to understand anything if we do that. We just are going to remain absolutely in the dark and stupid.
Well, right, you're dealing with politicians here, and yep. Politicians, they're not smart. And it, which brings me into my next my next topic. The BBC had an article this morning where Tony Blair says that politicians are underpaid. Here's his quote. Only an ex-politician can say this. Politicians are not really well paid by the standards of the private sector. This restricts the attraction of a political career at exactly the time when we most need the gene pool of our politicians to be varied, vibrant, and vigorous.
Good luck with that, pal.
So this raises a question for me. What does the private... The thing that makes the private sector more... varied, vibrant, and vigorous is that what does the private sector do that a politician does not?
Create value. Creates value, yeah.
Yep.
Produces something of value is what private sector entrepreneurs and businessmen and women do. They efficiently create value. And a politician is extraordinarily inefficient, and they're a consumer of the revenue that others have made. So a politician is the antithesis of someone in business.
So, but I know that over in Europe or in the independent parliamentary says that they get paid £67,000 a year. I'm sure they also have their expense counts and things like that. Here in America, they get paid probably roughly the same, right around there, same amount.
Yeah, it's where the President of the United States is paid $400,000, I think. Senators are in the 250 range, and congressmen at about 150 or 200,000. But their salary is insignificant compared to the benefits.
Well, that's what I'm
I was going to mention that. There's a benefit of going into the White House, as an example, like the Clintons, and you talk about how broke you are. You only make $400,000 a year, and you come out, and you're worth, you know, $100 million. So,
and part of that is because they found a way to receive bribes without going to jail. And that is that Saudi Arabia will go to the Bushes, for example, and say, if you run cover for us, if you do our bidding in the government, when you come out, your first speech, we'll fly you on our 747 to Saudi Arabia. You give a 20-minute speech, and we're going to pay you $25 million. It's a legal bribe. Yeah,
they have a library too that does that.
Yeah. But by the way, in the business sector, most entrepreneurs and most even corporate leaders are rewarded based on performance. They have stock options. If they run the business well and the value of the stock goes up, they make money based on their stock options, and they're paid bonuses based upon their performance. And if they do not perform, they're fired. If a business spent more for 50 years in a row than it took in, if it had to borrow money to survive and was losing money every year, do you think that there would be any businessman that retained their job, much less was paid anything? Welcome back to Shattering Miss. Larry, I'm going to ask you a question. You're a businessman. Would you pay somebody to lie to you?
No, I wouldn't.
No. Would you pay somebody to spend your money to the point that they left you bankrupt?
No, I wouldn't. I'd fire
them. Would you pay somebody to go off and attack other businesses using the weapons of war?
No, I wouldn't.
No. So why would anyone in their right mind want to pay a politician?
Well, I'm in total agreement. There are several things wrong with that. It wasn't just the money and the benefits and all the money they get in the special deals back in the back where their wife ends up owning a piece of land that they're going to put a U.S. Highway system through. It's not just that. It's also when he's talking about we want the best and bright. Seems like the best and brightest are everywhere. They're in the military. They're teaching, even though, you know, a teacher's certificate's like the lowest thing you can get. They, you know, they're doing all these things. What I would tell you is that I have never heard such idiocy. And I'll just pick out one in your state, Nancy Pelosi. I have never heard such idiocy come out of anyone's mouth. I mean, it's you can't even make this stuff up. It's so bad. You know, I heard they talked about, you know, there could be 4 or 5 hour waits and doctor's office. She goes, well, that would be a great time to make friends.
If their wages
say what?
If their wages were so horrible, why would they all spend millions of dollars to get these positions?
Power, influence, and perks.
Like I told you in the break, Craig, politicians shouldn't be your job. That should be something that every, you know, 2 months out of the year, I got to be in Washington, D.C. Well, why is that? Well, I was elected to be the representative for my state, so I got to take a month off from my actual job. I got to leave GCN to go to Washington, D.C. Politician shouldn't be your job.
It shouldn't be your job. It was never intended to be a job. I mean, I can understand how the president of the United States for 4 years is a job. Don't run for re-election. 4 years, it's your job for 4 years. If you want the damn job, do it as service. You call it public service. Do it as a service. Don't get paid. Don't accept any monies for speeches or books after you leave office. Then it's genuinely service. And as for the rest of these buffoons, say you want to be a senator, then do it on your own nickel and do it for 6 years and don't run for re-election.
And you know what?
And you want to be a congressman, go and donate 2 years of your life as a congressman. Don't run for re-election. Don't make it a job.
What job have you ever had to where you don't have to treat it like a job, too? I mean, get up, go to work every day.
Well, I mean, of course, they don't have to do that.
They don't have to do that.
They have to show up.
How often do they work during the year? It's like 2 months
pathetic.
Out of the year.
It's pathetic. It's pathetic.
What job is that? If I offered you $100,000 to work for two months?
It ought not be a job. And, Larry, you mentioned best and brightest. The best people I know are members of the covenant. The brightest people I know are those who observe the Torah. I don't know how you get to be good from the values that matter, or smart from someone who actually understands and has a proper perspective to evaluate things, without being part of the covenant and without studying the Torah.
Well, there's very few people that advance any information that would actually be significant.
Right.
I watch a lot of the whodunit shows. I happen to watch a lot of the nature shows, too. Those are about the two things I watch.
Uh-huh.
And I have to tell you, when I see a guy, I watch one, Joe Kenda. He's a guy that solved nearly 400 homicides. And he's very clear about people murdering other people.
Uh-huh.
Yet, we put people on a pedestal that run to church every Sunday. Not we in the covenant.
Right. Correct.
But the society does, and they're killing their children. So
right.
As we advance murder, and that's just what it is.
Right.
As we advance
they're
murder,
killing their children's souls.
Well, your consciousness is all that can move on
this. Right. Oh, I know. I'm agreeing with you. It's just I wanted to make sure that for those who are not in the covenant that you know when you say that Christian parents are murdering their children, that it is literally true. The only part of us that matters is our soul, not our physical body, but our soul. And by leading them astray in this manner and involving them in the Christian religion, they're assuring that the souls of their children die.
I want to share something here just very quickly. We have a covenant member, and I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. I've known him for a long time, always, you know, electronically. Louis Incy in Canada, and his son died. It passed.
Sorry.
Yeah, a couple of evenings ago. And he and I were just talking, and he said, you know, the last thing his son did was got circumcised, actually.
Wow.
On his deathbed, believe it or not.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, the doctor said
to meet the
yes,
conditions of the covenant?
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, now, if you think about the merit, and I'll think this thing through. The merit of you and I are engaged, coming to know and share Yahweh's testimony, his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. When we share his Torah, prophets, and Psalms and point out how different his message is than the religious message, like the Christian message or the Islamic message, or even the secular humanist message, one of the things that happens to open-minded, rational people is that message resonates. It just, you say, oh my gosh, that's exactly as I would expect God to be. That's exactly what I would expect him to be offering. That's exactly what I would be expecting him to ask of me. And it just resonates. So it resonated with the father. The father shared the same message with the son. The son
His
says,
name was Richard.
Richard. And then Richard makes the decision to engage in the covenant.
That was the final request.
And how does that
make doctor
say? Say what? It gives me goosebumps. And you know how it's got to make you feel wonderful, but you could think about how tremendous Dad feels.
I know. I'm just talking to him, and he's that was his last request. And the doctor said, as far as he knew, this had never happened ever before.
Yeah. Wow. For those that do not know, there are five conditions for participating in the covenant. Those five conditions are, first, to walk away from religion and politics, to walk away from Babylon, to divorce yourself of the culture of humanity, and to instead walk to Yahweh. And the procedures that are laid out for this are, first, you have to distance yourself from religion and politics. Second, the requirement is to trust Yahweh instead. Now, you can't trust him if you don't know him, and you can't rely on him unless you know what he's offering, which means you got to study the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. The third request is to walk to him and become perfect, and you do that by observing, by celebrating his seven invitations each year, which begin with Pesach, Passover, which is the means to eternal life, matzah, which is the means to perfection. The only way to be saved is to be a member of the covenant and participate in these celebrations of our relationship with Yahweh, leading to Bekorim, where we become adopted into his family. The fourth is to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant itself. And the fifth is, if you're a man, to be circumcised. And actually, the way that the fifth is written, while we are required as men to be circumcised if we wish to participate in the covenant, the request is actually made of parents. So husbands and wives, mothers and fathers, to circumcise their sons on the eighth day. But those are the requirements of the covenant. And for those things, you get eternal life, you get perfection, you get adoption into God's covenant family, you get enrichment and empowerment. And there's no other means to way to salvation. There's no other way to know God. There's no other way to eternal life. There's no escape from death other than those terms and conditions. So this the fifth and final condition is circumcision. A wonderful story.
That's a pretty tough story too at the same time, but it is, and it's
the doctor saying that he was unaware of this ever happening before, that makes it uncommon. But Larry, maybe we're callous to this now because we've lived with the truth so long. But Yahweh etched in stone that only one in a million people, he said thousands, would receive his mercy by closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of the covenant. Thousands amongst billions is one in a million.
Yeah, and I'm sure this was a one in a million procedure for that to be the last request, and it was done. I just have to say that, you know, my heart goes out to Lewis and his family. You know, it's a pretty rough thing to have a child die.
I apologize for perhaps seeming callous here and just thinking about how
the negative is
how few people actually are circumcised as to meet the conditions of the covenant, and I am so far past life on this planet that I look at this as just a tremendous victory. It is a great celebration of life and of family and of love and of wisdom and of a wise and informed choice that I am certain that Dad misses his son and will miss his son for a few years, but oh my, this is a celebration of life.
When he wrote that, I said, well, we are a strange and rare people, and he wrote laughing out loud back, so, you know.
Yeah. It's not a goodbye, though. If he fulfilled the requirements, I'll see you soon. Right. I'll see you soon.
See you on Teruah.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, see you on Teruah. Absolutely. So it is such a celebration. And when you consider how short this life is, how frail we are, how many aches and pains we endure in this life, when you compare that to the overall benefit of eternal life with Yahweh, it is a very short and sweet goodbye. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We have Larry on the line, and Scott is driving the show today. Scott, what's next on your agenda?
Well, recently, this morning, actually, there was a report on Reuters that came out. The UN rights experts seek review of U.S. police practices.
So the bastion of morality in the world, the United Nations.
The pillar of humanity.
Sarcasm from every word. Wants to engage in reviewing the judicial policies of the United States. And what influence do you think that the United Nations will have on the judicial policies of the United States?
None. So, right. But they want us to review the U.S. police practices.
So there's the same United Nations that runs the schools in Gaza that manufacture terrorists and that aids and abets Hezbollah and their weaponizing of Lebanon wants to be the bastion of virtue?
Apparently. Here's a little bit of the story. United Nations human rights experts on Friday called for a halt to racial profiling by U.S. law enforcement officers and review of laws allowing police to use lethal force.
Hey, Larry, I'm going to ask you a question here. Was what happened in Ferguson a racial issue?
No. I can assure you, if you walk into a store and you beat up a store owner, push him around, steal his goods, walk out and try to wrestle a gun from any cop, I will promise you, white, red, yellow, black, or otherwise, they will shoot you every time.
Yeah. Now, the killing in Cleveland where the cop went Kamir Rice and killed a child. Was that an issue of racism, or was there something else at stake there?
I don't think that's an issue of racism. I think it was somebody thought that this kid had a gun. I think it was poor training, for starters. But, yeah,
stupid, poor judgment.
What about the
one in New York where the cop used the chokehold on a guy and killed him, the one that's spawning all the protests
right now here. I saw
that
video. I think that was murder.
I think the two of these three are murder. Ferguson, I would agree. I think Darren Wilson could have made 100 choices that were better than the choices he made, but it wasn't a murder. But the other two, I agree. I think they're murder. But
I think all three show a good idea of where, at this point, it's becoming more and more. You're getting more and more stories out about it. It gives you a mindset of a lot of police officers out there. They're not escalating or going down a list of, you know, I'm going to try this, 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 and this. It's, I have to use lethal force here.
I don't think you're right on Ferguson. I think that was a matter of this guy was huge. I heard the cop talk. He sounded like Barney Fife, low IQ, kind of a nice guy. I personally think that that was just somebody full of himself. Look, 65% of death by cops incidents are white.
Yeah.
White.
Yeah, there's no racial profiling. That's it. The issue isn't racial. The issue is that we have overarmed our police, and we've given them way too much latitude to using deadly force. And between the fact that way too many veterans are put into the police force who have been trained to kill, and they're given deadly force and they're using it, we have way too many police with way too many guns acting way out of control. That's the issue. It's not a racial issue. It has nothing to do with racial profiling.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, but since we went to profiling here, Scott, let me just add something here. And I've looked this stuff up. 90% of the victims of race crimes are white. 90%.
Correct.
Blacks commit 7.5 times more violent interracial crimes than do whites. And they kind of
rounded it up to eight times. Right, eight times.
They only comprise a seventh of the white population. So, seven and a half times would do that. There is a certain profiling aspect. Because what happens is cops go into violent crime situations and they're fired up. And they're going to be dealing with blacks way more often than whites. Yet 65% of the time is white.
Profiling, when used correctly to discriminate, when you're in a high-stress situation as to who the most likely perpetrator of a crime is actually being reasonable. It's being rational. And blacks have brought this hell on themselves by acting so poorly.